across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
32. My lovely guests are here with me this morning. What a news bulletin, eh?
Yeah.
World in there, is in there.
That's just, yeah, all the extremes right there in four
I'm just reading it. I'm just the messenger. Carla Keane and Faye Roberts, if you're involved with the art scene in Cambridge, you no doubt know them. Good morning, Faye.
Good morning.
And good morning, Carla.
Hello there.
Nice to have you with us. First of all, let's we say if you're not in the art scene, people probably know you. But tell me a little bit about yourself, Faye, first.
Oh, right. I'm a spoken word artist and I put events on in Cambridge and Edinburgh Fringe. I think mostly those are the things that I do. Spoken word events, including the Hammer and Tongue series, which is slam, competitive poetry, and allographic, which is much more gentle, less explicit judgment. Anyway, the idea being that it's a platform, whether published or on stage, for less well-represented voices. So,
By spoken word, you refer to poetry there?
Poetry and storytelling for allographic. To a certain extent for Hammer and Tongue, we generally make it broader in terms of spoken words, so that if it's rhythmic and if it's anything from hip hop and rap to something that feels more like storytelling, verging on stand up comedy, I guess for Hammer and Tongue, it all fits. Allographic, again, quite a broad remit. We've had people come and do dramatic monologues and duologues at the open mic. But the thing as well with Allographic is we try to make it as accessible as possible, physically, in terms of the building, in terms of how we allow people to communicate their work, and also to make it free at the point of entry as well, so following the Free Fringe model from Edinburgh.
Lovely. And Carla?
So I'm an improviser theatre maker based in Cambridge, and I'm mainly involved in the improv world. So I run improv jams, improv classes, do lots of shows.
And by improvisation, sorry to interrupt, yes. But for those who haven't seen an improvisation show, what do you mean by that?
So improv is an art form where it's entirely unscripted. It's generally known from sort of Whose Line Is It Anyway on TV, but it's much broader than that, and the things I enjoy doing tend to be more theatrical, but it just means like doing things on stage without a script,
and it's a real skill. Yes, I can't even begin to imagine it. And you teach this through workshops, and there are three levels that you get to. Yeah.
Mainly it's about kind of getting people out of their heads. I think adults particularly, they're kind of socialised in a way that means that there's this real fear of failure. There's a fear of kind of, what if I... initially, rather than kind of just putting people on stage and going, go, it's about just kind of freeing people's brains, getting them to free-form associate, and just be really, really comfortable making mistakes.
Yeah, that sounds great. We all want to be comfortable making mistakes. And you're here to talk about women in the arts in Cambridge, although, as we were talking before, you want to make this about women and non-binary. Mm-hmm. So explain to me what you mean by non-binary.
Non-binary. Okay. So it's more and more recognised now that gender, whether as expression or identity, is something on a spectrum, so ranging from entirely male to entirely female, I guess, and all the things in between, and also those people who prefer to think of themselves as without gender, so agender. This is decades old as a psychology concept. It's become more well-recognised mainstream. So you've got more and more artists, general celebrities coming out as non-binary, or various different flavours of gender non-conforming in different ways. I think a lot of people think it's maybe Conchita Wurst or something like that, a very, very specific image of it, but there's other images of a very pale type of skinny androgyny, but it's pretty much anything to do with, it's not necessarily to do with how you look, but how you define yourself. For me personally, it's been something that's been present. Well, gender theory generally nowadays, you'd say that someone has been non-binary or has been different gender from how they presented as a at birth, from birth. But it's only at this time that they've come to realise it. It's probably no coincidence that people tend to come out as non-binary a lot later because there's a lot less depiction of it in the media. Similarly to sort of 80s and 90s people coming out as bisexual or pansexual because, again, the media representation of it just wasn't there, apart from, you know, deeply untrustworthy people as a general rule. But yeah, I mean, it's something that's been there in human society from the get-go, and because we often tend to judge our society by a specific type of very Victorian-rooted Western culture and history and presentation, we forget that all sorts of different nations have and cultures have very different attitudes to gender than we have or have had. So sometimes it feels like we're just rediscovering how we were a long time ago, although that's possibly just me being pretentious. But yeah, and it's a way of being more inclusive to other gender perceptions, gender identities or presentations. If we talk about women and non-binary, it's a way of saying these voices that are less heard than male voices, especially cis male voices. Oh, and cis is the opposite of trans. Just another bit of vocabulary there. So if you identify with the gender you were assigned at birth, then you are cis, which means same side as, and if it's different from that, then generally transgender.
Thank you, Frank. We could have a whole discussion about this.
We really could. Yes.
But let's focus in on the art scene in Cambridge. It's a good art scene, would you say?
Yeah, it's. I think there's a huge variation. You've got anything from like your classical musicals going on, so Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which is about to happen. I've been looking on Facebook and seeing all the wonderful pictures of
the car.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see if and how they're going to make that fly. So you've got that, but you've also got things happening at the Junction, which is a really, like, within the UK, it's a really well-known experimental arts venue. And within that, say for example, I think on the 26th of September, there's going to be open conversation about the title of it is What We Can Do to Support and Represent Awesome Women in the Arts. It's based on something called Devoted and Disgruntled, which is an event which started with a very, very famous group of improvisers called Improbable. And Ruth Moore, who's a producer there, I was at the event where she had this conversation, and it became such a big popular conversation that she decided that she wanted to make a satellite event to that. And she's doing that on the 26th of September. And anyone's able to come and have this conversation about, you know, what can we do to really encourage women in the arts? So yeah, like I say, there's anything from the big sort of musicals that you might expect through to, again, the arts arts playhouse. I hope I've got that right. It's the arts playhouse, isn't it?
Arts theatre.
That's the one. Yeah. I get them confused.
And the Corpus Playroom.
Yes, yeah. The arts theatre, where I think they've got Posh coming up. And down to kind of the Junction where they're sort of, you know, holding more of these interesting events.
So given that this is a very rich area, fertile ground, are there issues for women? I mean, people might say, well, look, there's all this going on.
There's general accessibility issues all over, not just the physical buildings that a lot of the more community art stuff is constrained to, because not everyone can access the more modern buildings, for example, but that accessibility also extends to price point, to, you know, how much you pay to get into something or how much you pay to get involved with something. We do tend to forget income and class and education when it comes to accessibility, but it is something that's important to note. If you think about it, most of the arts here is fairly middle class, incredibly white, pretty able-bodied, and as with a lot of things, depending on what part of it you're looking at, whether more mainstream or more community-based, is a wide variation in what genders are producing and supporting, and whether it's something that's, whether people are backstage, as it were, behind the scenes, or front of you know, front and centre, literally on stage.
Is that something you'd agree with, Carla?
Yeah, I think it's that really tricky. You have a bit of a double bind as an artist, because what you see kind of encourages the people who maybe participate. So improv in particular, generally nationally, it's a problem that particular art form has. It's perceived as very white, it's perceived as very male. Mm-hmm. And it's not, as an art form, it's incredibly democratic. I love it, because this is it's just, you can be anything, anyone you want to be on stage, you know, like, as a more traditional actor, and I've had this kind of, you know, going to castings and whatever, whether they're amateur or professional, people are looking for a very particular type, a very particular person. And you kind of go, oh, I'm not fitting that box. But with improv, I love the joy that I can play anything I want to be on stage, and I can tell any story that I want to tell on stage. But I think there is the perception that it is a very particular demographic that do it, because that's what's seen on stage quite often.
So how do we broaden that out, if that is the case? How do we make things more accessible to a more diverse range of people?
Part of it is putting the effort into making sure that your billings are at least equal. And like I say, that's not only gender, but ethnicity and physical ability and neurodiversity, all of those kind of things. You want to make sure that people are seeing themselves on stage. A lot of the things that I do are very explicitly about that progression from audience to participant to, you know, booked performer to headliner kind of thing. So you can sort of see that, you know, gradient. And a lot of what I do here and in Edinburgh is about that representation. So when you come off stage and someone tells you, it's like someone was telling my story, and they're quite astonished because they've never seen that before. I remember one tiny, very, very excited non-binary person just really, really flailing because they'd never seen anyone on stage doing poetry about them, essentially. And it gives people hope, and it gives people connection to a wider world. And the idea that they could be doing it as well, I think, is huge. But somebody has to deliberately break out of the mould of what's easy to find. You have a lot of promoters talk about, oh, I've been told to my face it's not easy to get women of calibre on the stage. And you think, in Edinburgh Festival, you're struggling to find female artists for a start? That's extraordinary. And people will talk the same about physical ability, about ethnicity, all of that kind of thing. These visible or otherwise differences, their excuses always, there aren't enough. Whereas if you look at grassroots and community arts, you know there are plenty of people of all sorts of different backgrounds, presentations and all the rest of it, making art and wanting to make more of it.
I think this extends to it extends to comedy. You talked a bit about Edinburgh Fringe, but also even in such a huge national, international festival, mm-hmm. there are huge problems with in terms of comedy, like getting representation of women. That perception that women just aren't funny. That's not true. It's that thing of, we have defined what funny is.
Correct.
And that definition has been defined by a particular group of people. You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about comedy and whether or not it should push boundaries, and about censorship and those kind of things, which I'm kind of engaged with as an improviser. There's this kind of perception quite often that because it's comedy, we must push boundaries, and that those boundaries mean, you know, being offensive. I disagree with that strongly. There are people that disagree with that strongly. Mm. You know, it's a problem that happens sort of across the arts. Maybe less so in sort of theatre, which is about challenging those quite often, as sort of experimental theatre.
I was going to say, a very specific branch,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And how have you dealt with this then? I mean, it seems to me that maybe you've dealt with it by taking it into your own hands and saying, you know, I'm going to set up something that that is accessible to people and represents me.
That's go on.
I was going to say, so that I run a monthly improv jam, and I'm very conscious of making that a safe space for anybody who wants to participate. A lot of people who come to that, and my classes as well, they kind of come and they're very sort of like, oh, I've not done this before, I'm quite sort of scared. And especially people, actually, women, people of colour, whatever, they're like, oh. And I work on really making a space where, like, and the jam, we've just kind of established a code of conduct, because it can be quite a scary thing, and it's people who don't know each other as well, so we with improv as well, you don't know what's going to be said or done, so there's a risk that something, you know, someone might do something. But we kind of set out a very clear set of boundaries and say, this is okay, this is not okay. And within my classes as well, I don't do it kind of as explicitly at the front, but it's I gradually feed that idea in of you know, this is how we might refer to this. This is what we might do. This is what we might not do. I don't sort of lay it down as rules, but more as sort of guidelines and encouragement. And then if you take that on board, you take it on board. If you choose not to, you choose not to. But yeah, I kind of, especially in a jam environment, I'm kind of working on making a safe and open space. And I find that there are a lot of, like, women, non-binary people, people of colour, do come to improv jams. They love it. It's a sad thing that they kind of drop away in the improv world after a while, and I'm not sure why that is. That's something that sort of happens nationally, and no one sort of knows. I don't know, but certainly that sort of beginning stage of trying it out and doing it, there's a lot of making it safe
and very by creating allographic and hammer and tongue,
and all those kind of things. We're also quite explicit on stage, the beginning of each night, each event, about how the only guidelines for allographic and other voices in Edinburgh is that. Don't kick down, and this is something we've nicked off comedy, actually, as a concept. Kicking down is a shorthand way of saying don't use this literally elevated, amplified, spotlit platform people's attention to denigrate people of less power than you, whether as individuals or as groups. But also with allographic, we say no apologies, because again, it's like with the improv classes and the rest of it, and similarly with the workshops and courses that I do for poetry, is that people will start. I mean, before they've even performed, you get a lot of, especially women and queer folk, sorry, LGBTQIA folk, and to a certain extent disabled and people of colour, who the first thing they say before you hear their poem is sorry. So they're apologising for it being new, for it being old, for them reading it out, for them trying to do it from memory. And you want to say, I don't care, can I hear the poem first, please, before you need to know whether you're going to apologise. And you see a lot in open mics, especially mixed open mics, that... especially white, able-bodied men, cis men, will get up and there'll be no apologies. There'll be their presentation of themselves is much more confident, much more absolute. And it's fascinating seeing that difference and trying to work out when that training happened. So we try and both explicitly and implicitly, and I know people talk about safe space, but we like to say with allographic and other voices that it's also a fierce space, that you should be able to express who you are, especially if it is not something that is usually seen in the mainstream, but also that it is safe for you to do so. And we use spoken word is very good around trigger warnings and stuff like that as well. I know that's controversial. I know some people talk about that being spoilers, about that being infantilizing the audience. I tend to go with very general trigger warnings and saying people will be talking about dark and difficult stuff. If you need to take a break, if you need to physically move out, then do so. And people have said that they really like that idea that they could go if they needed to, and they find that they don't need to because they know they can. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
They've been given permission to feel unsafe, to have a moment to themselves, and they actually don't need to go. It's fascinating, that psychology of that. But and you go to different events and you steal different ideas from other people about what's a good way to make things accessible and all the rest of it. And
so we're conscious of time, and unfortunately
we could
there's a whole show in here. We've got about 2-3 minutes left, so if people are listening to this and thinking this is great, I want to get involved in this, I want to get involved either in improvisation or in spoken word or just generally, what advice would you give them?
So if they're Cambridge-based and you're interested in improvisation, there are a few places you can go to find out about that. Generally, Facebook is a great place to find out about things. So for improv jams, there is a monthly improv jam that happens on the second Friday of the month. That's open to everybody. It's free as well. And there's a page on Facebook, Cambridge Improv Jam. Similarly, I run an organisation called Red Cape Improv, and you can find that on Facebook as well. I'm also at redcapeimprov@gmail.com, and you can email or have a look at that Facebook page, and there are courses generally running all the time. Yeah, so if you're excited about that, you can do that. Also, I have a quick show plug, if I can. So my improv company are doing a show called The Apartment. That's at the Corpus Playroom from the 26th to the 28th of September. It's an improvised comedy drama. It's about people living together, kind of like the humour of that, the recognisability of that, and all of those sort of interesting relationships and things that happen around the idea of living together.
And Faye, spoken word?
Oh, spoken word. Similarly, there's a fair amount on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of thing. Certainly, we have a group with the unwieldy title of Poetry and Spoken Word in Cambridge and Nearby, but it does pretty much do all of those things. Allographic has its own page and group, as does Hammer and Tongue Cambridge. We do workshops and as well as the open mics, and those are both on the last Sunday of the month. At Cambridge University Centre Wine Bar. That's on the ground floor there. And again, they're free to enter, and it's a pay-as-you-like thing. So if you don't have any money, then just tell your friends. And if you do have any money, then please help us go toward our costs. This show plug for us, this coming final Sunday of the month, 29th, we have Claire Trevien, who's doing a very rare nowadays trip to the UK, so I kind of grabbed her as quickly as possible. She'll be doing a workshop on poetry, The Poet and the City, I think. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's specifically to do with how brains change in the city and how our relationship with the city, as opposed to the usual sort of poetry of place, which a lot of it is about countryside and the outdoors and all the rest of it. This is a different way of looking at that, which I'm really looking forward to being in the workshop myself. And Hammer and Tongue is on the first Friday of the month, and on the 4th of October it'll be Caroline Teague, and with support from Nikki Marone, who's back in the city, and it's going to be really nice to see both of them.
Lovely. Well, lovely to talk to you. This is a whole show. Honestly, this is a whole programme. I see a whole hour on Cambridge 105 Radio devoted to it. Honestly, it would be grilling. You can do it. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much for coming in on Sunday. What have you got lined up for the rest of your days?
I have some writing to do, and I'm started an unpaid sabbatical from work, so I'll be doing a lot more focus on the artistic stuff that I do, and hopefully some auditions for voice acting and narration stuff that I do as well. If I've got time for that, that might be a daytime tomorrow thing. Some writing and some publicity. Marketing never stops. Carla's much better than I am.
What about you,
very
Carla?
Very inspirational.
Sunday is going to be my day of rest. Saturday is our traditional rehearsal day. So that on top of kind of like during the week, mainly doing lots and lots of marketing. Marketing never stops.
No, it really doesn't.
Will probably be some marketing today as well.
Yeah. Well, good luck, both of you, with your marketing and your resting. Thank you again for coming in. And good luck with your future project.
Thank you
very much.